This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Phil Clement, and we're coming to you together live from the NHL store powered by Reebok in beautiful Manhattan. We're on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-NHL-ON-XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll take your calls in a little bit. We're going to change the format a little bit today. And then we're going to be joined by the chairman of the Philadelphia Flyers, Mr. Ed Snyder, who has to make a train back to Philadelphia. He's actually in studio with us. So, Bill, you and I will get rolling. And then before we take calls, we'll chat with Ed. Does that work for you?
Fantastic. Good to see you. How was Nashville?
Nashville was terrific.
Yeah.
Despite the reports from some quarters, the franchise is really doing okay.
That's awesome.
They have a good fan base, good enthusiastic fans. And David Freeman and the local partners are really doing a good job. You know, it's funny to me because people tend to compare franchises that have been around for 10 years with franchises that have been around 40 years, 80 or 100 years. In the
10
case
years
of the
getting, isn't, in the life of a franchise, 10 years can be a little blip.
A little blip. And frankly, part of what makes sports great is the history, the tradition. And it gets passed from generation to generation. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of snapshots. I like to see the whole movie.
Yeah, well, that's great for Nashville. Great time of year as well. At some point in the show, as we move forward, I want to find out, I'm sure fans are interested too, in just what the mechanics are of how trades are reported and how they have to be approved, because we're coming up on the trade deadline. Who will be the sellers, the buyers, and a lot of teams don't know yet because the races are so close, especially in the West.
That is true. Everybody is still in the hunt in the West, and what, 11 teams in the East? I know that makes it a little nerve-wracking for some of our clubs, particularly their owners. But, you know, also tonight, while we take a romp around the hockey world, Marty Brodeur returns tonight. 7 victories away from Patrick Waugh's record of 551 victories, and he's 8 victories away from claiming the record, which at some point means I'm going to have to start following him around, because obviously I want to be in the building.
At some point this season, you mean?
Well, based on his past performance, Ed Snyder, who's here already, said...
It's probably time to bring Ed in, isn't it?
You know what? We'll talk to Ed first, and we'll get to this later, because clearly he's anxious to add to the commentary. So, Ed Snyder, welcome.
I couldn't help that. I'm sorry, you know. I'm not looking forward to Brodeur, you know, getting all those wins.
But they're not playing all of the games against the Flyers, though.
No, but
that's the good news.
We're fighting them for first place in the conference.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that people have said about you, and we're talking to Ed Snyder, chairman of the Philadelphia Flyers, is you are perhaps one of the most passionate owners in all of sports. Now, you didn't grow up a hockey fan. I think it would be interesting for our listeners to know exactly how you got involved with the Flyers and what your background was.
Well, I was, at the time, I was running as vice president of the Philadelphia Eagles football team, and I had seen a hockey game at Madison, at the Old Garden. Gump Worsley, I remember, was in goal, Montreal and the Rangers, and I thought it was the greatest spectator sport I had ever seen. And when I heard that the National Hockey League was expanding, I thought that it would be perfect for Philadelphia, and because it's such a great sport. And I've been a hockey man ever since.
So in other words, you know, there are some people like me who get this rap that they used to be in another sport and they came to this sport. And so you were a football guy of all things.
Yeah, I was a football guy, but I quickly became a hockey guy. And I think it's the greatest sport in the world, and I love it, and if I ever lost the enthusiasm that I have for it, I'd get out. But so far, it's
41 years.
More than 41, from 67, 43, 42.
Well, your math isn't great.
Whatever it is. Yours isn't either.
That makes you... thank you. That makes you...
I'm staying out of this.
In terms of seniority, our most senior... And I don't mean by age. I mean by tenure. Most senior owner that we have. How has the game changed, and what was it like in the early days of being an owner compared to now?
Well, the game in the old days, I mean, we got in, we were one of the original 12 clubs. And
that's a takeoff on the original six, yeah, as only one in the original 12 could say.
Yeah, exactly. And the meetings, of course, you know, we had, you know, 12 or 15 guys in the meetings. Now you go to a meeting and it's a giant room with all kinds of people, and you try to know most of them, but it's difficult. And it's gotten bigger, but it's gotten bigger and better. The game is better than it's ever been. I love the new rules. I love the way we're playing now. I think it's the greatest game, and it's gotten better in my way of thinking.
You know, it's interesting, and for our listeners, we're talking to Ed Snyder. You were a member of the competition committee, and you were one of the 10 people really responsible for the changes we made coming out of the work stoppage. What do you remember most about that process, and did the things that we put into place work out the way that you had anticipated?
Well, the great thing about the process is we had... members on the competition committee, general managers and players, and of course I was the one owner representing the owners, and we all felt very much the same way. I mean, there was a coming together of the minds of everybody on that committee. I don't remember any great negativity on the part of anybody in the things that we wanted to do and the things that the league eventually voted to do, and it's opened up the game. You know, I like to compare the old days just prior to that, not the old days, but the years just prior to when we changed the rules. It was like if you were in football and a wide receiver wanted to go out, he couldn't get out to catch a pass because you just hang on to him and hold him. That's what happened to our game. It became a lot of clutching and grabbing and a lot of things that just worked their way in. We didn't really have to change that many rules. We basically started enforcing the rules that were already there to a great extent.
You know, there's been a considerable amount of debate and attention focused on the issue of fighting on the game. And the Flyers may be perhaps best known from the era when they were dubbed the Broad Street Bullies. You want to talk a little bit about what that was like, why the team was the way it was and got that reputation, and your view of fighting now?
Well, at the time... teams did have what they called, you know, their enforcer, one guy or two guys. And in our very first year, the St. Louis Blues in the playoffs terrorized our players. I mean, they had Barkley Plager and they had, Noel Picard and guys that just...
Bob Plager.
Beat up. I mean, yeah, Bob Plager. Plager they
brothers.
Beat up on our little guys. We had bought the Quebec Aces and we had a lot of French players that weren't big, weren't fighters, and we were terrorized. And I made up my mind that if that's going to be part of the game, we're going to be as tough or tougher than anybody else. And that led to what eventually was called the Broad Street Bullies. But fighting has a part in the game because, as I like to say, Gary, you can't run out of bounds. You know, you got the boards and, you know, guys are run up against the boards and you have to have some outlet if people start to take advantage with spearing or whatever. So it has a real part in the game, and I think it always will.
In your 41 years as an owner, give us, besides the Stanley Cup victories, a couple of highlights and a couple of lowlights.
Well, the highlight, one of the highlights was the Russian game in January of 76, where they brought over their all-star team, the Red Army, and they had beaten most everybody else.
Yeah.
They had beaten everybody, and it was the only time in the history of the Broad Street Bullies that all of Canada was rooting for us. all of a sudden, we became the White Knights, and we played the game like we always played the game, and they felt we were a little too rough, so they left the ice right in the middle of the game. They were going home. And it was the eighth game of an eight-game series in which, it would be their last game. They were going to fly back. And I went down, when this happened, down to their locker room. And Alan Eagleson was there, and basically Clarence Campbell was there, and I said, what's going on? And they were just talking, and I said, how much are they getting paid? Have they gotten paid for this game yet? And they said, they haven't gotten paid for the series yet. $25,000 a game. It was 200,000 Yankee dollars.
That was music to your ears.
That was music to my ears. And I
and
said,
that was big money then for them.
For them.
Huge.
It was huge for me, too.
But you had it in your pocket at that point and not in theirs.
But anyway, we went back to them and said, you're not getting paid for the whole series if you don't get back on the ice. So they huddled and talked in Russian, boom, 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 and they came back on the ice.
A lesson in capitalism.
Yeah, but that was
and leverage. And leverage.
It turned out to be a great event. I mean, we had like a 80% rating in Philadelphia on TV, and it was really a mind-boggling time. Low lights, from a point of view of the Flyers or of hockey?
Well, either.
Well, obviously, losing a year was really tough. I think that it was necessary, and I feel that you did a phenomenal job in the way it was handled. I don't think it could have been handled better, and I think our game is much the better for it now.
Enough about that. Low light as a Flyer owner.
Low light as a Flyer owner? Well, first of all, I love the game. It's hard for me to think in terms of low lights. The year before last, we ended up with the worst record in the league. That was a very low light, but we turned it around last year and went to the conference finals. So that was probably the lowest light because we've always had a pretty competitive club.
With the trading deadline coming up, how fidgety do you get as an owner? Or is that something you just leave to Paul Holmgren and your hockey operations staff? How active as an owner have you been?
I always leave it to to Paul Holmgren and the staff and previous general managers, but I ask a lot of questions. And in fact, Paul and I have been on the phone probably two or three times a day in the last three or four days because we have cap issues right now, even before the trading deadline. So those things, your cap is working.
It's our cap. speaking of things working, a few years ago, instead of you really being the majority owner, you took on a partner in Comcast. How has that worked out for you and for the franchise?
It's worked out great. You couldn't ask for better partners. Brian Roberts and his dad, Ralph, I mean, these are wonderful people, and it's a great relationship. Quite honestly, I have to beg Brian to come to a game. I mean, they have their hands full, and you talk about people that are hands off. They just feel that, if we're running it the right way, they're just happy as they can be.
And they've been a good partner for the league as well. A relationship, perhaps, with Versus we wouldn't have had if you hadn't gotten them interested in hockey.
Well, I'm happy with that Versus relationship, and I hope it continues to grow.
You've created a foundation. I know you've been very active in making sure that the team is involved in the community. You want to talk about the Ed Snyder Foundation and what it does and your involvement?
Well, we started the Youth Hockey Foundation really to take inner-city kids and take them off the streets and put them on the ice, boys and girls, in the inner city who never had the opportunity before. We provide all of the ice time. We provide all the uniforms, all the coaching. We also have an educational portion of it in which we try to teach them life skills and other things that they don't have necessarily at home, and they have to get good grades in order to continue to compete and continue to be on the ice. We now have over 2,000 kids participating. We hope to someday have 10,000. For every dollar that's contributed to the foundation, I put in $2. So we've got it well funded, and we've taken over 5 city rinks that we're going to close in Philadelphia, and it's been great for us because now we have ice time 7 days a week for these kids, and they love it. They take to it immediately. They're now competing. We have teams now, and just to see it grow has been I want it to be my legacy, actually.
Since we do not hesitate to have shameless plugs, if somebody's interested in finding out more about the foundation or making a contribution, is there a website or a number they can call?
Yes, they can. They can call the Flyers offices, and they'll give them all the information.
That sounds good. Okay, so the Flyers are 4 points behind the Atlantic Division leading Devils. You have two games left against the Devils. What are you thinking at this stage of the season? What does the rest of the season look like from your standpoint?
Well, we like our team. we like the Devils team, too. They're a very, very good team. With Brodeur coming back, believe me, it's frightening. But they've done well. Amazingly, without him, I think everybody is maybe a little surprised how well they have done. So it's a credit to Lou Lamoriello and the coaching staff. They've got a great organization. We're going to do our best to catch him. We have a game in hand. In addition to those two games, we have a great rivalry, and we're looking forward to it. We think we'll do well.
We're talking to Ed Snyder, chairman of the Philadelphia Flyers. What's been your perception of what the economy is doing to sports and to the teams you run in Philadelphia? I noticed that you've announced that for season ticket holders, you're not raising ticket prices for next season. What's the thought process for somebody responsible for running a club in these challenging economic times?
Well, the thought process is that we're concerned. I mean, if you're not concerned, you're not doing your job. Fortunately, this year, the Flyers are ahead in revenues. And a lot of that, of course, is that season tickets and suites and club seats were purchased prior to the economic problems. So we don't really know what's going to happen next year. We're sending out our renewals on season tickets. We have already sent out our playoff ticket invoices, and we're doing very well. So we're hopeful that it won't affect us too much, but we realize that in these economic times, we certainly weren't going to raise ticket prices. We'll have to find ways to cut costs to make up for that.
Bill, since Ed used to sign your checks, you didn't always have an opportunity to ask him anything you wanted. Now is your chance. Is there anything you'd like to ask the chairman?
Sure. Besides Bobby Clark and Bernie Parent and Billy Barber, the three Hall of Famers that have played for the Flyers, and you're in there as well with Keith Allen, who's the greatest Flyer to play?
Besides those three?
Yeah.
And present company excluded.
Oh, I ain't on the list, Gary. Believe me, I ain't even close to the list.
Well, I didn't want him to feel he had to be kind since we were sitting here together.
Well, you know, Bill, I hate to pick a player. You know what I mean? It's difficult for me. I mean, in goaltending, Pelle Lindbergh. Unfortunately, his life was cut short, but I felt confident that he was going to be another Perron, the way his career had taken off and the way he played the game, and he was a great goaltender. But then, you know, you get into other positions and, you know, you think of Tim Kerr and his quick hands and how many 50-goal seasons he had and really never probably got the recognition he should have. John LeClair, I mean, also, and, you know, you go on and on. I could probably mention Eric Lindros, but quite frankly, it was a controversial time, and therefore he doesn't rank in the top 10 Flyers all time in my mind.
Very diplomatically said. And on that note, I know you have a train to catch. We want to thank you for stopping in, and we wish you and the Flyers a good conclusion to this season, whatever that may be.
Thanks a lot, Gary. It's nice being here.
Fantastic. I'm probably run into you on Friday night back at the Wachovia Center for the Montreal game.
Come say hi.
I will do that. The NHL hour is going to step out. The phone number here is 877-645-6696. Come on aboard. We'd love to chat with you. 877-645-6696. We'll be back to answer your questions right after this.
Devils. You're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Thank you, Martin, and welcome back. It'll be fascinating to see how well he plays tonight.
Welcome back in more ways than one. It will be fascinating, and so many people have said, oh, poor Scott Clemens, and they sent him to the minors after the job he did. guess what? He's an unrestricted free agent this summer, and he's going to end up with a one-way NHL contract. This was a great opportunity for Scott Clemens. It might not look like that right now, and he's also not going anywhere. You know, well, they could trade Scott Clemens, and now, if something happens to Marty Brodeur, if his elbow isn't that good, guess who's going to play? It's Scott Clemens again.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
Great story.
It's one of the reasons that sports is so much fun to follow, because it's always so unpredictable. And speaking of unpredictable things, we've had people holding since we took the air, and I think we might as well go to the phone calls. And appropriately enough, we'll talk to Rob from Philadelphia. Rob, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204, Sirius 208. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? Just a couple of quick comments. Well, first, let me just say that, Mr. Bettman, I really appreciate what you've done at the NHL, especially since the lockout. The game's the best it's ever been right now, I think.
Well, thank you.
I think you've done a great job. And I didn't think it could be better if you would have asked me 10 years ago, but somehow it is. So
the only thing could be better is you can call me by my first name. Mr. Bettman makes me feel old and achy.
All right. Okay, Gary. And Bill, by the way, you're one of the best hockey analysts out there. But we miss having you on a regular basis in Philly as a color man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. A couple of quick things. First, I wanted to ask Gary, are you guys noticing that the clutching and the grabbing and all is slowly kind of seeping back in? And if you are noticing that, is that something you're trying to address with the refs to rein it back in a little bit?
Well, let me take them one at a time. We're not noticing it, and we're watching for it every day. And in fact, the only criticism we really get is when people think that the officials made the call too quickly. In other words, the stick is it's horizontal, the arm is out, and the official from behind, you know, makes the call when maybe there wasn't any contact. The other criticism we get is, well, gee, he really didn't pull him or tug him that hard. But that to us is not something that we are giving up on. We think the standard is working very well, and we're not letting up on it. And if we thought we were letting up on it, we would tell the officials to get tougher. There was a second, and the second question you had.
Oh, okay, yeah. The second question I had, it's not really a question, it's more of a comment. I was just curious to hear what your thoughts were. I notice a lot that when it comes to suspendable hits and things like that, it seems like a lot of the time that the suspension is based on the result of the hit more than the actual infraction. And I'll give you an example of that since I am a Flyers fan. Just the other night, I felt clearly that the hit on Claude Giroux by Talbot was a suspendable hit. But because he wasn't injured and he popped back up, he didn't pop back up, but he came back and played, I feel like it wasn't really reviewed and nothing really happened. Whereas if he would have gotten a concussion and laid flat on that ice, I have no doubt Talbot probably would have gotten suspended for it. So I kind of get, it's a little frustrating because I feel like a lot of times the result is called more than the actual infraction itself.
Well, you know, I understand the perception. I think part of it has to do with when there's an injury, the act typically was worse. In other words, if I do something to you and you get up, it may have been wrong. Maybe there'll be a penalty. Maybe there'll be a modest suspension. But if you severely injure somebody, the act was in all probability worse than if there was no injury at all. But as I've repeatedly said, when you're dealing with supplemental discipline and all acts are reviewed, everything that goes on the ice, they're kind of like snowflakes. The fact of the matter is that no two are identical, and there are a host of factors, you know, maybe a dozen, that Coley Campbell looks at before he makes a decision. And you know, it really takes background like his, the experience he's had at all level of the games, for him to really understand what takes place, what is wrong, what needs to be redressed, and what the appropriate punishment is. But on balance, if you severely injure somebody, then you probably did something that was worse than if you didn't injure them. But again, that's not the litmus test. It's one of a variety of factors that are taken into account.
I can see that point, though. And it's hard not to factor that in. How do you not? It would stand to reason that if somebody is seriously injured, then the offense warrants a suspension.
Although sometimes there's an accident, sometimes what happens that causes the injury is kind of fluky, but Coley takes that into account as well. You know, but also, we'll have plays where we'll suspend somebody where the officials didn't even call a penalty.
Right.
And that's part of the review that we do by the Hockey Operations Department watching every game out of Toronto.
Well, I'll say this. It's a gray area that I think Coley Campbell and his staff do a fantastic job with because it's extremely gray. Everyone's different.
And nobody's happy with the results.
Right.
I mean, there's a little bit of partisanship, and that's a good thing that goes into how people perceive these things.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we go to our next caller, which would be Pat in New Jersey. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM and Sirius.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you? I was hoping to catch Mr. Snyder to give him a compliment, but he took off. So I just have one question. I called a couple weeks ago and talked to Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy about the TV. I was saying that they would put the cameras down lower. You can see the whole ice. And like in the winter game, you could see, like on a power play, they showed the whole thing. You could see the movement, and you could see plays behind. Whereas when it's on regular TV, where the cameras are up in the third row or whatever, third tier, it seems like you're only seeing, like, from the net to the blue line. And I was wondering, he said something about he would bring it to their attention, but it depends on the cameras in the league. But, I mean, I think more people would be excited to watch hockey if they saw it at the ground level because it's much quicker.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, by the way, we've heard that comment, and the broadcasters, both locally and nationally, have certain ways that they like to televise our games. Mm-hmm. There has been a lot of experimentation and change and adding of more cameras and lower-level cameras.
Right.
This will continue to evolve, and in fact, if you subscribe to Game Center Live, we have games, and that's on NHL.com. That's the out-of-market package where you can watch four games at once if you're a subscriber. But we'll also have games where we can give you additional camera angles to see. The entire space the technology will occupy in broadcasting games, either on television or streaming them on the Internet, will provide viewers with more and more of an opportunity to get the looks that they want. And so we're in a space that will continue to evolve, but you'll see and have an opportunity to see the game from more angles than ever before.
Well, while we're getting the cameras closer to the ice, can we get the announcers closer to the ice?
Those are good seats that we want our fans to have.
I know, and that's one of the reasons that I've heard for years that ownerships in different buildings have said, we're not going to put a camera here because we're going to have to wipe out 12 seats, and the live gate is the great revenue generator.
But a lot of that's changed with the advent of the robotic cameras. Because you're now mounting those on a post, then you don't need quite as many camera operators and camera positions that block out seats.
That caller's right. Old Maple Leaf Gardens in Montreal, even the Canadian cities, they have low camera angles. It's so much better. The higher the camera angle, really, the wider the shot has to be, the smaller the players look.
But that's where high-definition television helps as well.
Sure it helps, yep.
But it will continue to evolve, and because of what digital technology represents. It's really our fans getting what they want when they want it, and the ability to have more options either on television or on the Internet to see different things and to provide more access will, I think, evolve to giving what our last caller thinks is important in terms of his viewing of the game. Why don't we go to Keith in Florida? You're on with Bill and Gary, XM, Sirius, 208, anyway, I'm okay. How about you?
Good. Just want to continue, first of all, about the HD telecast. What is going on with, first of all, MSG Network with the Ranger Island, the Devil, and Save the Telecast? They still on the center ice package have not been showing the HD feeds.
That's something that we're working on, and we hope to have it resolved in the not-too-distant future. There are a variety of access issues that we're dealing with. With Madison Square Garden Network and the clubs, but you're right, and we should be having their HD feeds, and that's something that we're working on.
Is the lawsuit against MSG and the NHL still going on in the court, or has that been resolved?
No, that's still percolating, and it's something I'm sure at some point we'd all like to get behind us, but at least for the time being, it's still pending. And that's sometimes a fact of life in this business. Michael in Illinois, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM and Sirius.
Hi, guys. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you
for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to say kudos to Bill first for the interview earlier with Dean Lombardi. That was just so chock full of information. It was just, you know, you don't get that kind of information every day. You get a lot of talk about, you know, teams and how they're doing, but you don't get that kind of information. That was just really cool for me.
Thank you. Dean's a great guy and a real thinker. So, I believe me, I was as impressed with the information Dean was giving us as you were.
All righty. Gary?
Yes.
I almost said the Mr. word.
I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you were comfortable not using it. Great.
Could you explain waivers? Or at least a brief, you know, what it is?
Sure. In its most simple form, if you're looking to either get rid of a player or send them down to the minor leagues, you put him out there for all of the other clubs to have an opportunity to claim him. And if nobody else wants him, then you can either get rid of him or send them down to the minors. There are certain exceptions to players who have less experience, not needing waivers. But for the most part, it's a competitive balance issue that enables teams to claim players that perhaps other teams either want to stockpile or don't want. And you get to pick it based on where your performance is, so the team that has the worst record gets the first priority on waivers if more than one club would like to claim a player.
Besides young players that haven't been in the NHL enough years and you can send them back and forth, what other players are you allowed to send back and forth?
Well, if there are players...
Without clearing waivers.
Emergency recall. Scott Clemenson, by way of example, was brought up to the Devils on an emergency recall, which is why they were able to send him back down.
The number here is 877-645-6696. It's the NHL Hour. If you have a question for NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, now's the time to jump on board. By the way, the NHL trade deadline is coming up. It's next Wednesday, March the 4th. Is it 3 Eastern or is it noon Eastern, the deadline?
Three.
It's 3 Eastern,
three.
Noon Pacific. That's
right.
What, okay.
Otherwise, it would
I figured
be,
that.
If it was noon Eastern, it 9 would be a.m. 9 a.m.
And that ain't
on
fair.
The West Coast, and that's not fair.
That's not fair, but we'll have wall-to-wall coverage on the NHL Network and on XM as well. We're going to step out when we come back. Please join us. We'd love to talk to you.
Kings, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody.
On the music selection. Great job on the music selection. I didn't know that was all yours. You usually come in and select it. You got an advance, you did a little advance work.
I spent too much time on airplanes the last 5 days, so I had more time on my hands than
okay.
I should have.
So look here, I put you on the spot last week when I said, name a third member of Buffalo Springfield. I knew you'd get two, but I cheated. I was listening to Underground Garage the day before, and I knew that Richie Furay was there. You've mentioned on the show that you attended a Bruce Springsteen concert at the Smith Opera House in Geneva, New York, when you were attending Cornell with your wife, Shelley. She wasn't your wife at the time, but you traveled to see Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
How would you like a picture of Springsteen on stage at that concert you were at?
No way.
Well, this is courtesy of Greg Baldinger, who's an alum of Hobart and William Smith Colleges. This is the alum magazine, the Pulteney Street Survey, and there's a picture of Bruce Springsteen on stage at the concert you attended from 1973.
You know, it's a shame we're not on television. This is
I can see you in the crowd, too.
Actually, you might be able to. I think we paid $5 for the tickets at the door, and we sat like 10th row center.
Great.
Incredible.
So, again, I've come at something in a secondhand way because this wasn't even mine to give you. I just started, you know, we were going to give it to you before the show, but we said, that's not good radio.
No, this is
good. You know?
Actually, it's probably better TV. thank you very much for that. That's very exciting.
There you go.
Before we take the callers, let me do something that will be a little dizzying and then it result in a plug, okay? And this goes to the fact that we're heading to the trading deadline. 25 clubs out of the 30 are still in the hunt. In the East, ninth place Carolina, which has 67 points, is at home to eighth place Buffalo, which has 68. Important game. Meanwhile, 7th place Florida, which also has 68 points, visits 6th place Rangers, who have 69. Another important game. In the West, there's a four-way tie in points for 7th place among Minnesota, Dallas, Edmonton, and Anaheim. They all have 65 points, and all of them except Minnesota are playing tonight. Anaheim's at Boston, Dallas is home to St. Louis, and Edmonton's home to Columbus. Columbus, which is 6th in the West, is only 1 point ahead of that group at 66. So depending on Thursday's results elsewhere in the conference, the Blue Jackets and the Oilers could end the evening anywhere from 6th to 10th. Why did I do that? In addition to the fact that it's exciting and interesting.
My eyes crossed yet.
This is a great night to watch all the games I just mentioned, and we just happen to be running a special for Game Center Live subscriptions called Race for the Cup. You get the rest of the season for only $79 U.S., and to the extent the games are on simultaneously, you can watch up to four of them at once on your computer.
Wow.
So there you have it.
Awesome. And by the way, just a little footnote, when you saw Springsteen, somebody gouged you. The tickets were actually $3 a ticket, according to this article.
No. That was $3 if you were a Hobart student.
I
was an interloper from out of town. And frankly, even in 1973, $5 wasn't all that much money.
No kidding.
You know, gas may have been 30 cents a gallon, so it didn't cost us a whole lot to get up there. But I was delighted to spend $10 on that date.
I bet.
You know, because I did pick up the ticket for the missus. We weren't going Dutch in those days.
What a gentleman.
Yeah, something like that.
Bought dinner.
No, I think I did that too.
Okay.
Let's talk to Sam in New Jersey. You're on XM Sirius, and you're with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys. I love the show. I'm going to The Rock today. I'm a huge Devils fan and got the Marty Brodeur gear in my car. Just can't wait to see Marty come back. And I sit up in section 208. I pay $15 per seat. I have season tickets. And every time I see you guys at the Rock, Mr. Bettman, I see Deputy Daly down in the lower level. Do you guys ever consider sitting upstairs with the other fans upstairs to get a bird's eye view, a different experience of the game?
Actually, I do on occasion. I try to walk the concourses. There are some cities where I go to where I'm visiting, and I'll sit upstairs. The one that most notably comes to mind is when I go to Edmonton, because I sit with the former chairman, whose seats are actually in the upper bowl. Generally, when I'm at a game, though, I'm entertaining, and I have some business function, which either means I've got to entertain someone, feed them, and sometimes it's easier to do that either in the club seats or in the suite. But I am very mindful of what the view is from all the seats. And frankly, at $15, I think that's a great deal. And I'm glad that you're a regular participant in viewing our games. And to use a cheap pun, I think The Rock will be rocking tonight when Marty comes back.
Absolutely. And Commissioner Bettman, you and Bill are always invited in Section 208, so the next time you're at The Rock, come visit us, okay?
Will do.
Will do, thanks.
And thank you. Why don't we take our next caller, which would be another New Jersey caller, Bill. And I don't think it's Bill Daly, because he's upstairs working. Although maybe it is. Bill from New Jersey, you're on with this Bill, Clement and Gary, and this is Sirius XM.
Hi, guys. I got a quick comment and a quick question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm a first-time caller, by the way. I know Billy Clement can vouch for me on this. That Ed Snyder is one class act. If you know lovely what we know, what goes on with him and being the owner, he's so passionate about being with the Flyers, it's not funny.
By the way, I can attest to his passion, particularly if the officials aren't getting it as right as they should on any particular night. He knows the game, and you know, he may have started out as a football guy over 40 years ago, but he really knows the game, and he is really passionate about the game. Bill also reminded me when we were in the break that Ed was, I believe, on the search committee that hired me. So, you know, I've known him since I thought anything about doing this job. Anyway, you wanted to say something else.
Yeah, he's a, like I said, a total class act. And my question is, if I have a team, one of the teams, any team, like Vancouver or somebody, if I'm well over the cap, am I still allowed to make a trade? And how long do I have to do to I know the Flyers are in that predicament with bringing Barrera.
Well,
I was just wondering.
The only way that you can be over the cap is really with an exception, such as an injury exception. And if you're over the cap and you've replaced an injured player, you've got to make room for him to come back. So your ability to make trades depends on the room that you're making or whether or not you're replacing an injured player and using that exception.
Yep.
The cap is a hard cap. It's intended to be. And we think it's one of the reasons that there's this terrific competitive balance and great races that we're seeing.
The Flyers today made room for Danny Briere, who's going to play tomorrow night, by waiving Aussie Vanonen and Glenn Metropolit today. So if somebody picks them up, they're off the payroll. If they don't pick them up, then they're sent to the minors. Flyers still have to pay them, but that salary doesn't count against the cap.
There you go.
Yeah.
It actually ties together a number of calls that we got today. Waivers, salary cap, it all fits together.
It's all coming together.
It's all coming together. And why don't we talk to Mike in San Jose about reviewable plays? Mike, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Let me guess. You're going to talk about the goal last night.
Actually, the first question, and this is, I've always wondered this, when you know, because it seems like there's so much play in front of the net, and there's so many bodies in front of the net, and the referee is always behind the net. And my question is, when a puck is being determined whether it's gone over the line, and they go to Toronto, and we're watching the broadcast on our local network, and the angles that when we're looking at looks like you just can't tell or whatever. Does Toronto have angles? Are they looking at angles that we wouldn't be seeing on our television?
No, because they're getting the television feeds. Although, interestingly enough, about last night's game is I believe both broadcasts were in standard definition.
And, yes, it was.
Okay, but we happened to have a supervisor at the game who was in the booth. And he had access to the high-definition overhead cameras. So the supervisor who really ultimately made the call after talking to Toronto in the building got to see it in high def, and they could see the puck, and they could see that it did not completely clear the line. So while you couldn't see it as clearly and as well as the supervisor who made the call did because you were seeing it in standard definition, we did have somebody who had a high-def feed to be able to see it. So it is a case where it worked well, and it was conclusive from the review that it was not in. I think the official made the call on the ice that it was a good goal, but it didn't clear the line completely.
I thought it was going to be a question about the puck off the netting.
No. This was about a goal that was disallowed.
But San Jose, Detroit, it happened again. It happened last year. Puck went off the netting. Nobody saw it. Fell down. What should be pointed out, Henrik Zetterberg scored last night, but San Jose had a shot. They had a scoring chance. Christian Ehrhoff had a scoring chance before Zetterberg went down. I still think there are certain instances, like from the blue line in, if the puck goes off the netting, you want to keep the play alive. I don't think anybody would have a set play.
We don't want anybody using that as a tactic.
I don't think it could be a tactic, though, if it happens spontaneously. Coming up the ice on the rush, any puck outside of the blue line, I think they could use it as a tactic. It would just be part of the fabric of the play if it happened quickly within the zone.
Isn't the game good the way it is? Why do we have to complicate things? Why do we have to change the rules? Why do we have to add another dimension on something that seems to be working so well?
So that the games are 2 hours and 15 minutes long instead of 2 hours and 30 minutes long. Have you ever tracked
223.
223? How many times a game does the play stop because the puck has gone off the protective netting?
Not very many.
Six?
Maybe. Not even.
I'm going to start counting.
Are you? All games.
Oh, I don't mind the rules.
I'll get you the statistic for next week. We'll see what we can.
Things are great. We're just looking to polish.
We're polishing. Okay. You know, if you polish too hard and too often, you lose the shine.
No.
Let's talk to Jim in Alberta. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM Sirius 204, 208, and NHL.com.
Hi, guys. I was just going to ask that same question as the last guy.
Oh, well, by the way, what else would you like to talk to us about? How's the weather in Alberta? Are you in Calgary or Edmonton?
Oh, just south of Calgary, so. It's cold here. We got lots of snow.
Flames fan?
Yeah.
They're having a good... No?
Sharks fan and Leaf fan. How's that?
How did that happen?
Oh, been a Leaf fan since I was a kid.
Like many people. How'd you get to be a Sharks fan?
Well, there's a kid on that team.
Ah.
That's why we're Sharks fans.
That's great. It's all good. And I assume you have the Center Ice package or Game Center Live, so you can be watching all the Sharks games because you're out of market.
That's right. And that, and we did have it on high definition last night, and it didn't look that like it went in, but that was my opinion.
There you go.
And, okay.
Thank you for calling in.
You bet. No problem. Thanks.
Our pleasure. Why don't we talk to Norm on Long Island? You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner and Mr. Clement. Mr. Clement, you are a great player to watch with your days in the Flyers.
Why, thank you.
See, I told you you should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. Two quick points, if I may. The first thing that's driving me crazy is the calls on goalie interference. Last week, I attended the Islander game. I think it was Brendan Witt. Brendan Witt got called for a penalty. Wasn't Brendan Witt. One of the Islanders got called for a penalty standing in front of the crease, and he got pushed in. And the referee called him for goalie interference. And then last night, when I was watching the Islanders, I flipped over to the Ranger game to watch them lose. One of the Rangers got called for goalie interference when he was pushed in the net. Is there anything that could be done to address that?
Well, it is a discretionary call, and sometimes the push isn't as impactful as the result may appear. Sometimes a player gets pushed and he embellishes. The player who gets pushed does have an obligation to try and avoid the goaltender, and my guess is the officials looking at both plays made the determination that notwithstanding the push, the player who was pushed didn't do enough to avoid the goaltender. And that's a call that gets made on a regular basis.
Tough call. That, to me, is one of the toughest.
It is tough. But you know what? It's not open season on goaltenders, or we'd have a complete disaster on our hands. You got to try and avoid the goaltender.
Got a lot of equipment on.
Yeah, it's okay.
Come on. They're well padded.
Oh, stop it. You sound like somebody who's got it in for goaltenders.
Well, I was a forward. What else can I tell you?
I understand. Let's talk to Dave in Chicago. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM Sirius.
How you doing? I got a point about the point system that we got now. Why not just eliminate it? Because it seems like getting a point for kind of finishing where you started at the score. But if you eliminate the points and just go by win-loss record, keep the format.
Tough connection. I'm sorry we got cut off, but I guess the question is, why do we have points as opposed to just win losses? And the result of that is we've evolved. We've always had points. I think it works pretty well for us. We've got great races. And the way we evolved with respect to overtime and the shootout, I think it works pretty well. The bigger debate is whether or not we should go to 3-2-1. But I've never heard really too many people advocate eliminating the point system altogether.
Just surprising to me that the debate continues.
Well, as you said,
polishing.
People are
trying to polish. That's
and,
it.
And you know, one of the great things about this game and our fans is the intensity and the passion for the game, which is why people like to continue to try and polish and find new and interesting ways for us to be running the game. And the suggestions are great. And they're things that we discuss on a regular basis. And they're things that we will discuss, as we always do, with the general managers and then the competition committee.
Yep. We're polishing this up as well. XM and NHL Live, as well as the NHL Network, the trade deadline, we're going to be one of the places to be, one of the destinations. The NHL Network and XM starting at noon with NHL Live. Trade deadline is next Wednesday.
That would be correct.
Yep. At 3 Eastern, it's going to be a lot going on. I don't care how much happens between now and then. It's still going to be a very busy day.
Always is.
Yep.
It should be a national holiday. Well, speaking of national holidays, I don't know why that's a segue at all. Why don't we talk to Mark in Phoenix? You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. What about you?
Pretty good. I was wondering, I actually have a couple questions.
Sure.
The first question is, I wonder if a lot of times when I go out to eat, like TGI Fridays or wherever, they never heard of Versus. And sometimes they have to almost confiscate their remote control and find it for them.
I do that all the time.
At Fridays.
At Fridays.
I wonder, go ahead.
At any bar I go to. I've actually almost been thrown out of places for changing the channels.
And I wonder, is there a way you guys can maybe sign a contract with like a major restaurant to basically have them keep at least one TV on hockey when it's on, like whether it's on Versus or NBC.
But it's getting better. Versus is now in more bars and restaurants than ever before. They're in more hotel rooms than ever before. And if you don't see what you want when you're in, ask for it. I was in a sports bar over the weekend, and they actually had the NBC game on, which was I was there to watch it and have lunch, and I asked them to change a couple of the sets near where I was sitting so that I would have a better look. Don't be bashful. Tell them what you want to see, and they'll change the channel. And most places now are getting Versus and even the Center Ice package. And if you have a place that you frequent regularly and you're not getting it, ask for it and tell them you won't come back until they get it. You know, the fans need to be served.
But just remember, don't draw your guns if they're not loaded. Oh, if you're not prepared to stay away forever, don't threaten to do that.
You know what? You should stay away if they're not getting you the hockey games you want. That's it. There'll be other places that'll get you what you want. Pogi in Los Angeles. You're on with Bill and Gary. How are you?
Good, good. I've spoken with you guys several times before, so I'm going to call you Gary, and we'll work it down all the way where I call you G.
You know what? I was in Los Angeles on Tuesday taking a tour of L.A. Live. Have you been down there?
Yeah, we went there Monday after the game. They had an Armenian Heritage party.
Or Zach
Bogosian, we went over there. Luke Robitaille and some of the Kings showed up.
Isn't it spectacular? I mean,
yeah,
what they have done for downtown L.A. has been simply phenomenal. And I think they're expecting 20 million people in the first year to go through L.A. Live. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, AEG, the owner of the Kings and Staples Center, has built this complex to rival Times Square or any central meeting place in any city. It has clubs, it has restaurants, it has bars, it has a bowling alley, it has the Nokia theater, it has a Nokia club. It is out of this world, and so if you get to Los Angeles, it is a must stop on whatever you're doing.
Yep. It's got some kind of museum, too.
Yes, it has the Grammy Museum. Very good. Yeah.
Question. I heard on some of the shows that they want to change the penalty rule where you have to clear the blue line for the penalty to be called.
Well, it's been one of the things that's been discussed.
On the delayed call.
Yeah. I mean, this year we now on the delayed call do the first face-off with a couple of exceptions in the offensive zone. And the notion is not enough for the team against whom the penalty has been called to simply touch the puck or perceptively get control of it, maybe make them clear it. But just one of those things to talk about as we polish.
There you go.
To crib your. It's something that I'm sure the general managers will focus on when they meet in March.
So, trade deadline. What happens? Somebody makes a trade. They have to file it through the office.
Well, two things. One, you have to put us on notice that you want to make a trade.
Right.
No trade is effective and binding until it clears a conference call with a representative from the league office. And the reason for that is twofold. One, to make sure it's in compliance with league rules, most particularly the salary cap. And two, we want to make sure that there's actual agreement between the teams on what the terms of the trade are. Sometimes, historically, I say to you, I'll take that player and I'll give you a first-round draft pick in 20 years, and you thought that it was a first-round draft pick this year. In its most egregious form, you know, I'm trading you this player and I want a first, and you think you're only giving me a third. And so the purpose of the conference call is to make sure that there's agreement on all of the essential
clarity
terms
of communication,
And that there's a meeting of the minds.
Yeah.
Very important, and as I said, as importantly, to make sure that league rules are complied with and that you're not engaging in a transaction that would violate the salary cap.
And then what happens? As long as you sign off, away they go.
And away they go. And what happens is you have to file in writing before the 3 o'clock deadline.
Uh-huh.
We may be backed up and we may not complete the conference calls until later, but you've got to be on record that that's the trade by 3 o'clock.
All righty. the Eagles. This is a final music request.
Yeah, but I don't think I requested this song.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
So whoever did this needs to be replaced.
Listen, we will not be talking to everybody until after the trade deadline, so enjoy an unbelievable week. And next Wednesday, March 4th, is the deadline. We'll start our coverage with NHL Live starting at noon on the NHL Network, XM and Sirius, and we'll be around all day for that. Lots of great games tonight, including Marty Brodeur's return. Enjoy your hockey tonight, and we'll see you next Thursday, everybody.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.